This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Hey, brand builders. I hope to see you live and in person at this fall's 6th annual Social Brand Forum. Digital marketing smarts in the heart of the heartland, right here in Iowa City, Iowa. Join past on-brand guests like Jason Falls, Melissa Agnes, Marcus Sheridan, and more. Listeners of the show get the best rate when they use promo code ONBRAND. Learn more and register now at socialbrandforum.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Peter Shankman. Peter is an entrepreneur, CEO, runner, skydiver, podcaster, Ironman triathlete, and most importantly, a dad. He's the founder of Shank Minds Breakthrough, a private online entrepreneur community with hundreds of members around the world. He's perhaps best known for founding Help a Reporter Out, the largest source repository in the world, which fundamentally changed how journalists source their stories. His customer service and social media clients have included Remax, NBC Universal, American Express, NBC, Universal, E-Entertainment, Sprint, the U.S. Department of Defense, Royal Bank of Canada, Saudi Aramco, Snapple, Walt Disney World, and many others. Peter is the author of 5 books, including his most recent bestseller, Zombie Loyalists, Using Great Service to Create Rabid Fans, and the upcoming Faster Than Normal, Turbocharge Your Focus, Productivity, and Success with the Secrets of the ADHD Brain from Tarcher Peregrine in 2017. Peter also hosts the top-rated Faster Than Normal podcast, helping businesses understand that ADD and ADHD is a gift, not a curse. He's based in New York City, where he's been up since 3 a.m. Peter, welcome to On Brand.
Lovely to be here. Thanks for having me, Nick.
So I had to drop in the 3 that you mentioned, how long you'd been up. So is that by choice, by necessity, or a hybrid of the two?
I think it's a hybrid of the two. I usually get up around 4 a.m. Today, I don't know, I'm playing my 17-year-old cat. It was just a little earlier than normal, and I was awake. Alarm goes off at 4, so probably around 2:45, 3 a.m., my eyes just opened, and I'm like, well, I know. You feel that, yep, not getting back. And yeah. I sort of just sat in bed for a while and, had my finger on the alarm waiting for it to go off so I could shut it off. And then now I'm up. But, I was first at the gym. Gym was completely empty.
That's really nice. It's great because I've had to get kids different places over the summer, and you have a 17-year-old cat. I have a 17-year-old son that's needed to be somewhere, so I've had to help him get moving over the past couple of weeks. And I got up to run then before that, and I ran this morning as well. And I got up at the other time, even though no one else really needed me. And I kind of thought mid run, why did I start this so early? But
That's the funny thing. I have a 4-year-old daughter who could sleep through anything, and I can't imagine what she's been like when she's 15. I can't even wake her now. But I bought a Peloton bike exactly for that reason. On the days that I have her, and she's not with her mom, she's with me like half the week. Those days, it's like I wouldn't be able to go for a run because she's 4. So I bought a Peloton, and I'm on the bike at 4:30. I'll do 1 or 2 classes, 4:30 to like 6 or whatever, and then I've showered and I'm dressed and I've had coffee and I've even done a little work before she. Before she even wakes up, it's nice.
Well, when you get it out of the when you find a way that you can make it happen, then it's less likely that it will get taken from you. So I'm all about the scrappy workout.
No question about it. Anytime you can get it, man.
So you have, you know, in our hyphenate bios, you have one of the more formidable ones with everything that you do and all of the different ways that you've done it and the different brands you've developed, along with your own personal brand. In reading through that, you know, I think I first encountered you in the Harrow days, but even moving through that, through customer service to where you are today with Faster Than Normal. I think, you know, we talk about personal branding on this show in addition to all the other aspects of branding, but yours has been one that I think you've really managed to make grow with you. What's the secret?
I appreciate that. I think that for me, a lot of it is just simply the fact that I am very lucky that I've been able to do things that I like to do. Doing things that I love to do. When you love things that you do, they become a part of you, right? You know, I remember my first job at a school, someone told me, it was the only job at a school, someone said, oh, you know, I was complaining about something. They said, oh, well, you know, dude, the only reason you work is so that you know, the only reason anyone works is so that they can have money to enjoy the time when they're not working. And I remember thinking about that and thinking, well, that seems kind of like a stupid reason to work. And when I left that job and I started going out on my own, I promised myself that I was going to try to see if I could make a living doing things I love and figure out a way to do things I love and get paid for them. And my very first attempt to go out on my own, I remember saying this. I simply said, when I fail, I'll get a job. Not if I fail. I was so sure in 1988 that I was going to fail. I said, when I fail, I'll just go get a job. You know, we're coming up on this October will be, God, 19 years. And I haven't had to get a job yet. And I've been very fortunate. And so for me, everything I've done has sort of started with the fact that it's something that I enjoy doing and something that benefits people. And if you're fortunate enough to be able to do that, then it sort of just grows with you as you grow. And it feels like who you are.
Well, I also think what's really inspiring to me, because I sometimes feel a little all over the place with what I'm working on, is that most conventional wisdom out there says that you just keep drilling very deep in this one particular area. And for whatever reason, I would get bored with something like that. And I think, you know, what you work on isn't unrelated, but it does seem like there's great diversity in your various areas of expertise. I think it's impressive to be able to cultivate those, but have you encountered that, I'm doing air quotes, of conventional wisdom of going really deep in one particular area versus kind of approaching a cornucopia of things?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you look at the kind of things I'm doing, the kind of things I've done in the past, they have a common thread and a common theme that no matter what it is that I'm doing, there's a theme of the fact that I create content. I create things that I like to think I know a little bit about and that people benefit from. 99.9% of that stuff I give away. My belief is that, you know, if you've had any modicum of success whatsoever, you have a responsibility to send the elevator back down. And I like to think I've had a little bit of success, not a lot, but a little bit. And it's the success I've had has come from simply helping people and businesses and whatever improve. I've been able to take the things that I know about and make a decent living helping people, teaching people how to do that, teaching people what I know and how to sort of benefit from that, whether it's how to pitch reporters better or how to utilize time management from things that I've learned about with my ADHD, or whether it's simply helping people get media attention or become better marketers or become better entrepreneurs. You know, there's always that. I think that I'm all over the place, but I'm all over the place with a central theme.
Yeah.
Right. So if you imagine a pinball machine, I'm a ball in a pinball machine bouncing around, but that pinball machine has very common themes throughout it.
So now, when you So your common theme is creating content and helping people, teaching what you know. Is, as you felt yourself move to a new topic, was that kind of bridging conscious, or did you kind of reverse engineer that? Now that I know I want to focus on customer service, here's a bridge I can build for the people. I mean, from a very tactical standpoint, when you talk about like building your audience and you have a, you know, marketing PR audience, and now you're building a customer service audience now to a brain science audience too. I don't know what the right word is. Is it take your audience with you? Is it bridge your audience? Is it just growing your audience?
You know, I think that, and I lost you for a little bit in there, so I'm going to try to answer that the best way possible. But I think that, you know, again, everything I'm doing, whether it's, if you look at the concept of PR, of marketing, of customer service, of even, you know, tricking your, building your brain to increase your ability to do things, all of that stuff focuses on very similar things, focuses on the ability to be smarter, to understand your audience, to understand the universe in which you're in, right? Whatever business you're doing, or whatever your industry is, whatever your audience is, to understand yourself and how you do things better. And so, knowing that, there are very, very similar themes throughout all of them. But at the end of the day, you know, my goal is to continue growing a brand that is, I guess, Peter Shankman. But that people have come to know as something that they can a brand they can rely on when they need help in whatever. You know, I'm not going to teach you how to play baseball. That's not my forte, right? I'm not going to be the fastest Ironman triathlete in the world ever. You know, but there are things I can teach you just from the things that I do and sort of the way I live. And I think one of the key factors of that is that I have never been afraid to share. I have never been sort of afraid to hold back or to I've never hidden the things that I learn, right? So the more things I learn, the more things I understand, the more I'm willing to share those things, I think it's the right thing to do. And so because of that, I do tend to have an audience because they tend to enjoy this content I put out. I'm also of the belief, and I've always been of the belief, that having an audience of any size, whoever you are, is a privilege. It's not a right. Right? I equate it to the same as wearing spandex. Right? I don't have the right, by any stretch of the imagination, to wear spandex. When I train for a year for a race, during the 8 hours or 10 hours it takes me to finish the Ironman, 12 hours it takes me to finish the Ironman, I've earned the privilege of wearing spandex. As soon as the race is over, you know, get my medal. Nice guy comes up to me, sir, congratulations, I need you to put on this bulky t-shirt. Okay, I get that. You know, it's the same thing with having an audience, is that, you know, no one's born with the right to an audience of millions of people. You have to earn that. For better or for worse, you have to earn that. And so for me, I try to always remember that. And I try to always remember that I want to be able to help my audience, because that right there is what you pay. That is your sort of toll, your charge for having an audience, is that you have to pay by giving back to them.
You know, I love that, and in thinking about the role that plays in personal branding, and in even talking with you about personal branding, I'm reminded, at least that would be the label I'd use, of the category that where I've seen you in the most high-profile way of late is as a commentator, oftentimes talking about the president, national politics, and I think making some very relevant, I guess I would call them personal branding points. And I feel like personal branding is such it seems like it's a dicey topic to some. Some people treat it like magic beans, like it's not a thing. I disagree and feel like it's very much a thing. But I also feel like when you've got the president currently with a very polarizing personal brand, which I think, you know, all presidents probably do, but this one especially. Does that help or hinder the idea of a personal brand?
What's currently going on with the president, and I am just so damn tired of talking about it, but what
so
I see...
I'd love to ask you again.
Seriously, what I see currently happening is this. I see the fact that, you know, you can get a lot of people to look at you by jumping up and down.
Yeah.
By not necessarily providing real content, real answers. You know, you jump up and down a lot, yeah, you can get people to look at you. The problem is that as a society, we have a very short attention span, and we're also very smart, and we realize over time, it might take a little time, 8 months or so, but we realize when it's full of sound and fury signifying nothing, to quote from Shakespeare. And so I think what we're seeing, especially past week or so, is we're getting really bored with the jumping up and down. And that jumping up and down does not a personal brand make. And that's hurting. It's starting to really hurt them.
Well, I think so, and again, it's very frustrating for a lot of reasons, and I do think that but there is that jumping up and down argument that I feel like as a brand practitioner, you know, I've kind of had to feel like I've had to like club people back down and say no, not that, and they say, well, look over there, but it's the jumping up and down stuff.
Well, the thing that is the jumping up and down stuff. Again, it can't last that long.
Yeah.
Right. After a while, you're going to, you know, it's misdirection is great. But misdirection doesn't last forever. Eventually, you're going to have to answer the question.
Yeah. And it is kind of just interesting watching it play out, because I believe that. But it does seem like, I don't know if time's dilated. It seems like most of the time, like in, you know, simple misdirection of a magic trick, you know, you eventually say, hey, what was your other hand doing then? Exactly. And I feel like we're again at an odd pace here, because it seems like it's several months, though it's felt longer, of kind of constant misdirection.
It is pretty crazy. But again, you know, I think we're also in a place that we've never seen something like this before. So for the first time, we're really sort of, we don't know how to handle it. But we're quickly gaining a tolerance for it. And it's going to, like I said, I think get really old really fast.
Well, and I think kind of bridging back to our previous line of discussion about your audience too, and what you do to them in a constant state of misdirection also.
Yeah. Well, and again, it goes back to the fact that if you're not honest with your audience, you have a problem there. And we're starting to see that.
Well, and I think there's some of those core principles that we as communications professionals have said, yeah, you know, you really can't, but it's like, I feel like we're in this kind of weird blackout period, like going around the moon, where it's like, yeah, but that worked. And it's like, but eventually the air will come out of the balloon or whatever metaphor we go with there.
Honestly, I all I can do, I think, at this point is watch.
Yeah, it is. It's going to make some vast case study that someone will have to put together. So why don't you? I'd love to hear more a bit, because, you know, even prior to what you're working on with your current podcast and upcoming book, you know, your and even our. Our quick sound check before we started recording today, your productivity, I've always thought of, with all of the things that you do, is exceptional. How did you end up on your current area of focus with Faster Than Normal?
So I've always been ADHD. When I was growing up, there wasn't a name for it. When I was growing up, it was sit down, you're disrupting the class disease. And you know, but I realized that over time, what was happening was I was learning how to sort of handle my hyperness, my inattention, my inability to sit still, things like that. I was figuring out ways to deal with that. And what I was doing was in essentially self-medicating, not in a negative way. I wasn't doing drugs or anything, but I was doing things like, you know, cracking jokes in school or becoming the class clown, anything that would help me increase my dopamine and give me what I was secretly searching for. On the other hand, as I get older and there became a name for it, I realized, well, shit, the stuff that I was doing was actually beneficial. And this is stuff that you know, there's a reason I have two types of outfits. I wear a t-shirt and jeans when I literally, my closet in my bedroom has two sides. It says t-shirt and jeans on one side. Or it says, I'm sorry, it says office or travel on one side, and that's t-shirt and jeans. On the other side, it says TV or speaking, and it's button-down shirt, jacket and jeans. And that's it. All my sweaters, my vests, my suits, all that stuff in another closet. Because if I had a, you know, I'd walk into the bedroom and, what should I wear? Oh, look at that sweat. I remember that sweater. Look at that. Laura gave me that sweater. I wonder how Laura's. I should look her up online. Wow, I wonder. 3 hours later, I'm naked in the living room on Facebook, and I haven't left the house. So what I'm doing is I'm figuring out ways that work for me without even, you know, without really having realized that that's what I was doing. And over time, once I finally started to realize it, I'm like, well, hell, this is beneficial, and this can help me. And so that was really what started me going and saying, I wonder what else I do. And I came up with like 10, 15, 20 things that I do. You know, I sleep in my gym clothes. Normal people don't do that. But I sleep in my gym clothes because if I want to get to the gym, I know the only time I'm going to work out is first thing in the morning. Because if I don't work out first thing in the morning, I can talk myself out of anything. If I have 12 hours in the day to figure out a reason not to work out, I guarantee you. You know, there's a meteor passing Jupiter. There's probably no chance of it hitting Earth. You know what? I should be at home just in case tonight. I'll figure out a way not to work out. And so I wake up first thing in the morning. I'm in my gym clothes. It's a lot easier to go to the gym and a lot harder rather to go back to bed.
Right.
Just for the gym already. So, you know, that's what I do. Because I also know that come 5:30 in the morning, when I get to the gym, come 6:30 in the morning when I'm done, I'm going to feel amazing, right? I'm going to feel healthier. I'm going to have made my calorie goal for the day, and it's not even 7 a.m. That, to me, is worth going to bed early and forcing myself to get out of bed. Because if I play the tape forward, I know, well, I'm not going to, you know, I didn't work out. Okay, so now I've overslept. Now I'm running around late. I haven't worked out. I feel like crap. Now I'm going to eat like crap. There goes my day.
Yeah.
Right. So I know what's going to happen if I don't do that. And that to me is not acceptable. And the funny thing is that that's one of the many things I do to allow myself to be the best I could be. And so from that, I realized, you know what, there's a lot of stuff I should be able to share with people for this. So for fun, I sent out an email to my mailing list, and I posted it on Facebook. I said, hey, guys, I'm going to hold a webinar on the things I do to make myself more productive. Anyone wants to come, it's free. I figured I'd get 100 people to sign up. I got like 8,000 people attending. Like, well, okay, if that's the case, there's got to be something I could build here. And that became the podcast, Faster Than Normal, which is talks about looking at ADHD as a gift, not as a curse. Right? We're always told it's a curse, but I'm like, well, it's a faster brain. Who wouldn't want – everyone wants a faster car. Why wouldn't you want a faster brain? If you know how to drive it. If I drove a Honda all my life and someone gave me a Lamborghini and I didn't know how to drive it, I'd crash into a tree. But if I know how to drive it, I could probably do pretty well. And so I looked around. I saw no one was talking about how to use ADHD as a gift, not a curse. And that's what I decided to build. And so it turns out a lot of people are in that boat. We've had guests including Tony Robbins, Seth Godin, Cameron Harrell, Scott Jordan. Really, really, really smart people, Vinny Totorich, like well-known people. And they all say, yeah, I have it and I use it to my benefit. And then from that, I'm like, well, this is a great way to tell this story. And I was reached out to by Tarcher, who's an imprint of Random House, and they said, you know, you should write a book about this. And I said, well, not only should I write a book about this, but, you know, it's not just about the fact of for people with ADHD, you know, I bet that people who are just – who want like a couple of hours more in their day back, right, and want to get a couple of hours, I bet they could use this as well. So that's really the crux of the book. It's for people with ADHD, but it's really for, you know, the person who just wants a few hours in their day back so that, you know, they don't wake up late and they don't wake up, oh, God, where'd the day go? How did I miss – you know. So that's really my goal. And again, if you circle back, bigger picture, comes back to helping people.
Well, and I think that that's, you know, I'm sitting here listening to the advice also, and you know, we talked about early running, and the silliest thing I'm doing is that my pajamas are remarkably similar in construction and fabric to my gym clothes. Why am I not doing this? And it makes me think that, yeah, there are lessons here that even those outside the ADHD community can benefit from here as well. So a question I have in the talking about the kind of the branding implications of this, with a personal brand that you've grown in many different directions, how do you decide when something is a part of Peter Shankman talking about this versus this needs to be its own kind of content brand?
I think I let my audience do that. You know, again, it's one of the things I learned from running Help a Reporter Out is that the audience really controls everything you're doing. And so for me, if I start talking about something and I notice that I'm getting a lot of interaction with it, people are asking questions and they seem to be a little more than, you know, more interested than normal, I will, I'll do a little more and I'll just do some homework and I'll see if that's something that really interests people. And if it does, I'll do some more of it. And then that's what determines whether or not it's something I could share or something I should grow.
But even in the like naming of it, if it should be, you know, a Harrow or a faster than normal or a non-branded entity that Peter Shankman's talking about.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you. I joke that the name of my first PR firm is the Geek Factory. And when I sold the PR firm, I actually kept the name. And that's the holding company. When I create something new, I put it into that holding company. And, you know, if it blows up, I'd make it its own thing. But for me, it's not really so much about the name. I don't really care so much about the name. What I care about is what am I building and how can it help people? And that to me sort of has always been the goal. And so the more I can do that, you know, the better. I don't really think so much about that. Again, that's the ADHD in me. I don't really think so much about the logistics of it. I hire people to do that.
Now, as we start to wrap up, I have to ask our standard question of a brand that's made you smile, even though as I think about this question that we ask every guest, you have to have one of the most known stories of a brand that's made you smile.
I do, but that's not the one I want to talk about.
Good. I figured as much because you've probably told that story a few times.
The one I'll talk about is so it's actually a really interesting lesson to learn. So I was at a hotel in Morocco, of all places, about a month ago, and it was called the Royal Mansour in Marrakesh. And I have no status there. I'd never been there before in my life. No one knows me there. You know, at Starwood Hotels, I'm platinum for life. They have a file on me, right? United Airlines, they have a file on me. No one knew me. And I have this stupid, smartwatch has this thing where each day I have to burn a certain amount of calories. And if I do, it reminds me that I have a streak going, right? And the ADHD, OCD in me doesn't, oh shit, I have a streak going. Now I have to keep that up, right? So there'll be times it's like 11:50 at night and I'm running around New York City like a bat out of hell because I need 30 more calories of that. But long story short, I have this streak going and it's a pretty decent sized streak, several hundred days. And I was flying home from the hotel or from Marrakesh back to New York and I knew I was going to be on a flight from Marrakesh to Portugal, I think, then Portugal back to JFK. And flight from Marrakesh left at like 6 a.m. I wouldn't get home till like 7 p.m. that night. I'd be on a plane all day. I was in danger of missing my, you know, of breaking my streak. I went to the lobby or the check-in counter the night before. I said, look, guys, I know you don't open your gym until 7 a.m. I said, I have a 6 a.m. flight, which means I'm going to be up around 3 a.m. Is it safe to run outside? Because I know your gym's closed. I said, I really want to get a workout in before I go. I said, oh, well, sir, what time's your flight? I go, 6 a.m. They go, oh, well, sir, we'll make sure the gym is open and prepared for you at Is 3:30 a.m. okay? I went, yeah, sure. I was shocked. And I didn't think about what had to happen, right? The evening clerk had to tell the night clerk had to make sure the morning clerk, you know what? And so I got up, assuming that I'd have to run around the compound or something, because I never really found out whether it was safe to run outside. I get down to the lobby on my way to the gym, and the person at the desk, oh, Mr. Shankman, I guess so you're heading to the gym. Just want to let you know we've opened it for you. We put out a few bottles of water. If you need anything, please call us directly at this room, blah, blah, blah. I was floored. The gym was open. The music was on. I was the only one there. I got a great workout in. Made my numbers. You know, they didn't have to do that. I wasn't anyone special to them. I seriously doubt they Googled me, right? You know, I had no file. It was, you know, it's one of those things.
Well, it's, and like you pointed out too, there's so many things that they, that in situation, in seemingly simple customer service, things can get complicated when it comes to communicating to different staff internally, and it can get real hard real fast. But that's a great story and a great smile.
And I'll take it a step further. You know, they didn't have to do it, right? Which tells me that they care more about the customer, and that's important.
Yeah. So, Peter, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
My life is at shankman.com. I run a mastermind at shankminds.com. And faster than normal is, just as it sounds, fasterthannormal.com. It's the number one ADHD podcast on iTunes. Just search Faster Than Normal on iTunes or go to the website.
All right. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Peter, thank you for joining us on Brand.
My pleasure, Nick. I think this is, you got lucky in the respect that I am a little tired because I was up a little bit earlier than normal. So this is probably the slowest I've spoken on a podcast in about several years. So
it was great. And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. Recently, Bruce Kennedy gave us a shout on Twitter for being a podcast that he likes queuing up in his feed. And if you heard something that you liked on this episode or another, feel free to give us a holler on Twitter or your favorite social network using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. You can find links to everything we discussed at BrandDrivenDigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.